A man dreams that he is climbing a difficult rock face. He sees his friend slip and fall and moves to assist him, but moves clumsily so that he in turn falls and knows by the end of the dream that he has either been badly injured or has even fallen to his death, and he comes for guidance on what this might mean. Now, of course, you could find all sorts of psychological explanations for a dream like this. In what sense, if it's my dream, am I in danger of falling from a height in my life? Have I got beyond myself? Is my possible fall connected with my friend? You could do that, but it would be foolish to approach a dream of this specificity without asking some very simple questions that belong to the category we have already described as running a reality check on your dream. In other words, asking yourself, is it possible, even remotely, that something that you dream could be played out in waking life? So when the dreamer approached me with this dream, I asked him a few very simple, perhaps even simple-minded questions. Are you a rock climber? Yes, he responded. Do you know this particular rock face? Yes, he told me. As a matter of fact, he climbed it every few weeks. Is this friend in the dream also a rock climber? Yes. Is this the pattern of your climbing together? Yes. I said to him, look, if it's my dream and I'm a rock climber, and I know this rock face, and it's difficult, and I go up there with my friend, and I have dreamed that my friend slips and I fall, possibly injuring or even killing myself in trying to help him, I would be very foolish not to hold open the possibility that this is a quite literal advisory about a quite literal risk I might run up against in ordinary reality. I'm not going to bring about dream fulfillment in a negative way by trying to play this out and psych myself into having this trouble on a rock face. But I am going to be alert, I am going to be attentive to a possible challenge on that rock face on an occasion in the future when I might be climbing with my friend. And if I should happen to see my friend in trouble on that rock face, I am going to remember, try to remember, make it my intention to remember that I should not move precipitously, carelessly, in my effort to help him, or else I might put myself in even graver danger. My comment on the dream was reinforced by a strong association I had with another dream that was shared with me. The dream that had been shared with me prior to the dream of the fall from the rock face was a dream of a house painter I know, whose job frequently requires him to work on high buildings, climbing up on scaffoldings, hanging out over steep descents, over precipices, in city canyons, who told me once that since he had learnt to remember his dreams, he'd painted my house and that changed the pattern of his dreaming forever, it seems, since he'd learnt to pay attention to dreams and honour his dreams, he felt he had been saved from a possibly fatal fall by a dream in which he noticed that he had failed to check his harness in making a difficult and dangerous ascent on the side of a high building. Subsequently, a few days later in his waking reality, he found himself high up on a building, getting ready to do his paint job, and remembering his dream, decided to double-check his harness and found it was not safely secured. It was his dream advisory that led him to check, and in his opinion, saved him from a possibly dangerous or even fatal situation. The interesting thing is that there is nothing unusual about dreams of this kind. They are actually quite routine. We need to remember and recognize that the source of dreams is on our side, not on our case. And when our dreams show us challenging or threatening situations that might come about in our waking life, it is to prepare us for those situations so we can make wiser choices, so that sometimes we can avoid altogether possible dangers or hazards in our waking lives. And isn't it remarkably foolish that we avoid listening to these warnings and insights when they are shared with us by one of our truest friends and greatest counselors, the source of our dreams? So in this session, I would like to give you some further guidance and suggestions from a frequent flyer on how you might learn to recognize precognitive elements in your dreams, in other words, elements in your dreams that might relate to a possible future event or situation in waking life. I would like to teach you how to recognize these precognitive elements, how to scan your dream material so that you are more alert to these advisories when they come along, how to work with messages of this kind, how to check them against the patterns of your waking life, and, above all, in the manner of the shamans, to learn to recognize that when you dream about the future, you're dreaming of a possible future. Rarely is the future you dream inevitable. There are situations in which you might be able to do little or nothing about it. We'll talk about that. But often your personal future, as you perceive it in dreams, is a possible future with an order of probability that you can change by taking appropriate and sensible action in waking life to avoid a dream event being realized in waking circumstances when you don't like it. So this session is not only about learning to recognize and honor the fact that you can dream the future in your dreams, that this is a natural and even quite routine occurrence. It is also about the possibility that you can learn to choose your future more wisely amongst the many threads or paths of possibility that are displayed to you in your night dreams. The first step you need to consider, assuming that you are catching and writing down your dreams, keeping a dream journal, paying attention, is scanning all the dreams you remember for possible elements that relate to future situations in waking life. The dreams that are most likely for most of us to contain precognitive material are those boring, routine, humdrum dreams in which you're at the job, at the office, you know, driving home from work, going through the familiar patterns of everyday life. The dreams from which you often wake saying, gee, couldn't I have a thrilling, numinous, archetypal, shamanic dream? Couldn't I be making love to some tribal shaman in a hot environment or doing something halfway interesting instead of being at the office or driving home from work? Well, the fact of the matter is that it is those humdrum, ho-hum dreams that most frequently, for most of us, contain the most straightforward, clearest precognitive guidance on what might lie just around the corner in your life, because much of our life is relatively humdrum and trivial, although it becomes much more magical when you're working with dreams, because I think once you start working with dreams, you actually draw different people, opportunities, energies towards you. You'll play with that on your own. So don't dismiss those seemingly boring everyday dreams. I remember working with a woman who had worked part-time as a waitress in a restaurant in my neighborhood while pursuing her dreams in a larger way. She had a whole series of ho-hum dreams over the months she was employed in the restaurant, involving such mundane things as unexpected changes in shift, being asked to work a different shift, having to look for a bottle of wine left as a present for someone under the maitre d's stand in the restaurant, all of which checked out in waking life. Not unusual. It is natural and even routine for us to dream of matters large and small. We have had, since as far back, I believe, as we can trace the genesis and development of our species, an innate, God-given radar which enables us to scan the external environment, to scan things happening at a distance, to scan things that lie ahead in linear time. It has been part of our survival, as we have discussed. In Paleolithic times, it is now part of our evolutionary spectrum of possibility. This ability might have atrophied in many Westerners. It is still fully alive amongst indigenous people, such as many Australian Aboriginal tribes, who use it as a means of operating and cooperating with their environment. So start by looking at all of your dreams, large or small, weird or mundane, with an eye to the possibility that in some way, perhaps imperfectly understood by you, they might be played out in waking life. Sometimes you won't recognize the correspondence until waking life catches up with your dream. Let me tell you a personal story about that. Some years ago, I incubated a dream. In other words, I asked for dream guidance on an issue. The issue involved the business aspect of my writing life, my relationship with publishers, how I could get that together. In my dream, I am hurrying to catch a ferry. I never get to the ferry in the dream, but I feel quite satisfied by the end of it. But I'm hurrying to catch a ferry. The location is a place near a large body of water. It might be the ocean, but actually it looks more like the mouth or somewhere near the mouth of a large river that flows into the sea. I'm hurrying to get this ferry. In order to get to the ferry, I have to jump over tables that are piled up with packages and packages and boxes of books. I get over the table, and at the end of the dream, I feel absolutely satisfied, even though I have no recollection of actually boarding the ferry. Now, I cannot for the life of me figure out the meaning of this dream. I do some work playing with the symbolism, which I needn't go into here. But basically, I cannot catch the meaning of this dream at the time. Track forward in my life a full 18 months. 18 months later, my literary agent calls me at home over a weekend and he says, "Robert, I'm leaving the large company for which I have been employed. I'm going out on my own. I hope you'll stay with me." I ask for details, and Stuart, my agent, tells me, "Well, for a while I get started, I will be sharing office space in Dobbs Ferry, New York." So I have a ferry location. "I will be sharing space," he tells me, "with a book packager friend of mine." So I have the book packages. And remembering the dream, I feel a thrill of confirmation. It's as if a friend is patting me on the shoulder or whispering in my ear and saying, "Robert, this is fine, this is okay." So I say to Stuart, "Of course I will stay with you. Even if I had no other good reason, which I do, I would stay with you because of my dream. I asked for guidance on how to handle the business side of my life. I got a ferry, I got the book packages, and now I've got you as an independent agent." 2 weeks later, when I took the train down to Dobbs Ferry, New York, to have a celebratory lunch with him after the establishment of his business, I found myself inside my dreamscape. There I was, but near the mouth of the Hudson River that flows to the sea, at the site of a ferry that no longer runs. There is no longer a literal ferry at Dobbs Ferry, and I didn't get on a ferry in my dream. I was inside the dreamscape. That gives you a feeling of the confirmatory value of our precognitive dreams. It's not necessarily a question of knowing something ahead of time. Frankly, I don't want to know everything that's going to happen in my life ahead of time, nor should you. It would be frightfully boring, and the trickster element in life would be sure to trip you up. Doesn't it do that anyway, when you think you've got things planned and scheduled and worked out to the last detail? I want to be surprised, but I also want to have a source of guidance and confirmation as I approach the critical passages of life. That is the kind of dream that gives that to me. Let me give you another example of that kind of dream. A whole series of dreams determined my last change of house. In fact, two parallel series of dreams, totaling 17 dreams, guided the sale of the property I was then living at. My purchase of a new house, which I saw in dreams, had tantalized me long before I found it in physical reality, and other details of financing and practical matters along the way. You'll note, this is a very practical approach. It is about opening yourself to the higher self and the true spiritual value and purpose of your life. But to keep body and soul together, you need guidance. I certainly need guidance on the practical twists and turns of everyday life. Precognitive dreams give us that. Let me tell you a story from my last house move. I had a dream that puzzled me and scared me a bit. In my dream, the farm property on which I was living seemed to be in process of being subdivided. Surveyors were drawing a line across my land. And in the pendant to the main dream, I find myself sitting in an office, an attorney's office, and my family attorney is on the opposite side of the table. What is this about? Is it about divorce? It is about splitting up a relationship, dividing property, having the family attorney on the other side. I was very uncomfortable about the dream until, guided by a whole series of parallel dreams, I decided to sell the farm on which I had been living, and as part of the process of making it possible for the right purchaser to acquire the land, we agreed to do a paper subdivision of the property. We agreed to draw a line across the property which would give her time to raise money to buy the second half of the land while paying for the initial half of the land. Driving down Route 66 in Columbia County, New York, One afternoon, I saw surveyors drawing a line across my property and had that thrill of confirmation of recognizing a detail from a dream that had come to me perhaps 9 months earlier. The period of an average pregnancy, the period it took for this dream event to reach fruition, to reach delivery in waking life. When we came to the closing on the real estate deal, it became even more interesting, because my family attorney was sitting on the opposite side of the table at the closing. Strangely, the realtor involved had called me on the phone beforehand to say, "Robert, you know plenty of attorneys. You're moving from this immediate neighborhood. Pat, the woman who's buying your land, doesn't have a local attorney. Would you agree to give her your family attorney to represent her?" As a result of that phone call, my attorney switched sides in a benign way, and at the real estate closing, there he is, sitting on the opposite side of the table. Listening to these stories, I don't want you to say, "Gee whiz," or "Wow," or on the other hand say, "It can't be so, it must be impossible, it has to be made up, how can it be?" I want you to test these possibilities in your own life, in your own experience. In order to work with dreams of the future, frankly, we have to get beyond two knee-jerk reactions to these things that have bedeviled our culture. They don't bedevil dreaming cultures. In dreaming cultures, it's understood it's absolutely natural to dream things before they happen. Why? Because once again in dreams we are released from the body and the limits of space-time. What's so strange about being able to see the future if you're no longer limited to the body or limited to space-time? That is the condition you are in when you are dreaming, when you are dreaming truly. In order to dream true, to dream clearly about events that lie around the corner in your waking life, you have to get away from these two knee-jerk reactions. The first is to say, "Gee whiz, oh wow man, that blows my mind, that's real spooky." Because it's natural, it's even routine, it's not spooky, it's not gee whiz. It's something you can do, and in fact you are doing every night. All you need to do is wake up to your ability to work with it consciously. The other reaction is the dull pedantry of materialist, reductionist scientism that says it can't be so because we don't have a way to quantify this and replicate this in some laboratory of the kind where we can, however, measure the brain waves of sleeping rats with fantastic results. We need to get away from both of these reflex reactions and simply do it. This whole approach of conscious dreaming is about just doing it. Claim your own power, trust your own experience, take nothing on trust from me or anyone else, except no expert in these fields. You are the expert. Go do it. How do you do it? As we've seen, the first step is to be open to the possibility that any one of the dreams you remember might contain a message about the future. Let's consider a kind of dream that can be confusing. Suppose you're dreaming from someone in your life you haven't seen for a while, a former partner, former lover, former boss. You might think, well, you know, this is about integrating something from that relationship. It's about exfoliation, good word I've heard recently to describe this kind of thing. Or you might be open to the possibility that if your dreams are organized by future challenges as well as past stuff, past issues in your life, in your memory of dreams, you might remember a character in your life you haven't met yet, except in dreams, in the guise of someone familiar to you from a previous stage in your life. What I'm saying, to try to make this clear as possible, is this. If I am dreaming, or you are dreaming, of a former partner, former lover, former spouse, maybe your dream will turn out to relate to an encounter with a future lover, partner or spouse, maybe even someone you haven't met yet. And your dream of a past relationship is both preparing you for that and offering a teaching lesson by analogy about what went right or wrong in that former relationship. I had troubling dreams at one period of my life about a former employer, someone I really didn't like very much, and I wondered, why the heck am I still dreaming about this old bait noir of mine? Do I really have all this bad blood to deal with still? I thought I'd put that behind me. Then I walk into the office of a banker who is the spitting image of my former boss and is just as difficult, if not more so, when I'm looking for financing, and I realize my dreams had been preparing me for an encounter with someone who looked like that old antagonist of mine and also was involved in the financial aspects of my life. And when I recognized the dream teaching by analogy, about someone I hadn't encountered at the time of the dreams, I was able to use that to moderate my own reactions, to avoid getting as angry or as impatient as I might have done. I was able to take lessons from a past situation and apply them to a new one. The dreams, in other words, were preparing me for a difficult, taxing, challenging encounter with someone who was in a somewhat adversarial role, who I had not met at the time of the dreams. And therefore, in my dream memory, in my recollection of my dreams, I made a comparison between a person I had not yet met and someone I knew better from the past. One of the tips I would give you about noticing precognitive elements in your dreams is this, and it flows from the kind of story I've just been telling. Suppose you dream and wake remembering about someone you used to know but has not been current in your life for quite a while. Suppose you dream of someone you haven't seen for many years. I would suggest that you look at this kind of dream very closely as a possible precognitive advisory. If I dream of someone I haven't seen for a long time, my hunch is that my dream is telling me maybe one of two things. Either I'm going to run into that person again, maybe completely unexpectedly, or maybe, as in my story of the bank manager, I'm going to run into someone who will remind me of that old acquaintance, someone who will either resemble that old acquaintance physically, play a similar function in my life as lover, employer, or in some other way. Of course, the dream might be about the need to deal with old pain, old emotion. It might even be about soul loss I incurred in my now-ended involvement with an old flame or something like that. It could be about other things. But I'm going to look very carefully before moving on to other levels of dream work. I'm going to look very carefully in terms of a possible precognitive advisory at the kind of dream in which I remember an old acquaintance who I've not seen for some time. That might be one of the hallmarks of a precognitive dream. Suppose you suspect that you're dreaming about the future. Suppose you suspect that that dream of the car crash, the plane crash, or something more benign for that matter, is a dream that could be played out in waking reality. How can you be sure? Can you run a quick test of some kind? I think the best test you can run is that of trying to go back inside the dream by the techniques we'll explore in greater depth in the next session, and seeing if you can, in some way that feels authentic, change the ending of the dream. There are approaches to dreaming that will advise you to cutely re-script a dream whose ending you don't like. That's fine in theory, but it doesn't work if you have a dream that relates to waking life. Cutely re-scripting it may not help. The dream might call for action in your waking life to avert its consequences. I've already talked about the Memphis Muggers dream, a wonderful example, I think, in which the dreamer went back into a dreamscape in order to see whether she could prevent a possibly fatal mugging from taking place, and she found that she couldn't, in any authentic way, change the storyline of the dream until she took action in waking life. So if your dream feels literal, if the surroundings seem to correspond to literal physical reality, in other words, there are no fire-breathing dragons floating about, although they might exist in your reality on other levels, if clocks aren't melting and objects aren't shape-shifting all the time, if the surroundings seem literally realistic, and if when you try to go back inside the dream you can't re-script it in a way that seems authentic, you might well be dreaming of something that will be played out in waking life unless you can figure out how to take action in waking life to change it. So let us say that some of the further hallmarks of a precognitive dream are that the setting of the dream seems realistic in terms of ordinary reality. Maybe it's a place you don't know, but it seems like a regular house, hospital, road intersection. There are no screaming anomalies that you would take as signs that this is dream reality on the astral plane or the imaginal plane, where things are more fluid than they are in physical life. The test you can run, as I say, is to try to put yourself back in the dreamscape and see if you can change the storyline in a way that seems true. If you can't, it might well be a dream relating to your waking life, to physical events, and the way to change it might well involve taking action in waking life. Now, there are shamans who maintain that we dream everything before it happens. I was once out in the woods with a Native American shaman, a Reb Zedzotz, one who dreams a lot, powerful dreamer. And they were gathering firewood, and the shaman's son made a false move with the axe, and he gashed his leg, and the blood is streaming out. It's a deep cut. The shaman moves with deliberate speed to make a tourniquet. And he speaks calmly but firmly to his son along the following lines. He says, "This wouldn't have happened if you remembered your dream." The son protests the tourniquet is being bound around the gash in his leg. "Dad, I didn't dream this." His father says more sternly, "Of course you dreamed this. We dream everything before it happened. And if you remembered your dream, I wouldn't have to be tying up your leg." Interesting attitude, isn't it? Quite heretical to Western educated minds. I think I'm radical enough, perhaps the better word is practiced enough, in the dream worlds now to think that the shaman is quite possibly right. As I say, the futures we dream are possible futures. They can be changed by our actions, by our calculations, and above all, by our determination and willingness to work with our dreams and honor their messages, as long as we slam the door on our dream messages. You know what is likely to happen? We're likely to end up where we are headed. So long as we do not recognize that in dreams we see the natural outcome of our present actions and attitudes, a concept that is perhaps more immediately accessible to most Western educated minds than that of dreaming everything before it happens, so long as we do not notice dream advisories about the natural consequences of our actions and attitudes, we will end up exactly where we are headed. That, I think, is simple truth. Our dream source is constantly showing us the consequences of the attitudes and behaviors to which we commit our energy. If we are to change the possible future we perceive in dreams, what flexibility do we have? Well, there are a few guidelines I would suggest, having logged now literally thousands of my own precognitive dreams and their correspondences with waking events, and worked with probably an equal, if not greater, number of dreams volunteered to me by other people. Your ability to change the future you perceive in dreams is influenced, first of all, by whether you are an active dreamer, used to catching dreams, working with them, and checking them against situations in your life. Your ability to alter the future you perceive in dreams when you don't like it is also going to be intimately related to the role you play in the situation. In other words, if you dream of an earthquake on the West Coast in California, there might be little you can do to alter a natural disaster, unless you have some special relationship with Gaia, the Earth Mother, and can persuade her to change her habits, or persuade the great turtle on whose back we rest, according to Native Americans, on this great turtle island of North America, not to rouse itself and shake those pesky critters about on its shell. There might be little you can do to affect a natural disaster perceived in your dreams, but if you have a friend in San Francisco or Los Angeles and you have relatively specific information, you might call up and say, "Well, I have a notion of such and such." You don't want to panic people. You don't want to be sending out advisories, "Don't ever fly on a plane because I dreamed of a plane crash." That's ridiculous. You don't want to send advisories to people in California, "Don't live in your favorite state in your favorite house because there's going to be an earthquake." What else is new? You need more precise information, and to get that information, you need to learn to remember more of your dreams and to go back into those dreams by the dream reentry technique we're about to introduce in depth and check the messages more carefully, get more detail. But to keep to the main point, your ability to influence the future you perceive in dreams is intimately related to the role you play in the situation. If you are a principal in the dream story, There are many things you might be able to do. If you're a minor character, there are some things you might be able to do. If it's a dream, you dream of another person at a distance from yourself, as in the case of the Memphis Muggers dream, you might be able to work out a smart way to get that information through. You don't necessarily want to pick up the phone and panic people by telling them, I had this crazy dream in which, you know, something horrible happened to you. You might find a gentle and smart way to act on that dream advisory. I'll give you a personal example. I dreamed some time ago of a house in London where I used to live, a house I did not know at the time of the dream, in which a toddler was in danger of falling from an open window, one of those windows that goes all the way down to the floor. And in the dream, I was furious that this window had been left open, that it had not been nailed shut or had bars put across it, or in some way at least been kept closed. The window is on the landing in the dream. The toddler is going down the stairs, is rushing in that happy, free-spirited way of toddlers learning to move about, rushing straight towards the open window. In my dream, angry, expressing my disgust at the whole situation, I pulled the window down, moved the toddler to safety, and nailed the window shut myself. When I woke up, I was still agitated, even though the dream was about a situation at a remove, both geographically and emotionally, from myself. I sat down to try and puzzle out what house it was. I had an inkling. And when I guessed that it might be the house of someone I once knew well, who had recently moved houses in London, I called a mutual friend and I described the dream situation, the window going down to the floor, and I asked the mutual friend whether she could confirm this or could actually go to the house to check on the situation. She went to the house, checked on the situation. The window was, as I had seen it in the dream, on the same landing. It was not secured, and on the day she went to the house, the window was open, and there was a toddler in the house. At my request, she made the suggestion to the owners of the house, without mentioning me or the dream, that really it was dangerous to have a window going down to the floor like this that could be opened, and on this occasion was left open, with a curious toddler running about. The window was nailed shut. That is a personal example of getting a dream message that affects the well-being of another person through to that person without necessarily making a fuss about it, without claiming credit for it, without making a big noise, without even necessarily saying, I dreamed this. You'll be able to figure out your own way to work prudently. You don't want to make a big fuss, you don't want to cause a scare, but sometimes, if you're an active dreamer, you will get messages for the benefit of other people, and it will be up to you as part of your personal practice and part of your personal fun, because it is fun to help other people out, to work out how to pass on messages of this kind. What other factors might influence your ability to change the future you perceive in dreams, to choose your possible future and bring about a happier outcome in your waking life than you perceived in your dreams? Well, the time gap between your dream and the waking event to which it relates is quite critical here. We get dream advisories of an urgent nature, and also of a trivial nature, sometimes the night before. And when you get that advisory the night before, it might call for instant action. The upside is that if you dream of something the night before, you watch the event being played out in waking life, it's relatively simple to relate the dream to the waking event. I mentioned the dream in which I saw my possible death in a car crash. The night before, I was scheduled to take a plane to Pennsylvania and rent a car and go through a landscape that I did not know that might have resembled the dream. A more mild and benign example is a dream in which you see a salesman coming to your door, as I once did, and offering you lobster, which has never happened before, but the next day a salesman drives up to my door offering me fresh lobster from the Cape. A small thing, trivial thing. Just another reminder of how routine it is to dream this kind of thing before it happens. As I say, the time lapse between your dream and the waking event to which it might relate is rather critical in figuring out how to enact or avoid the outcome perceived in your dream. If you're dreaming of something that is developing in the near future, on the one hand, you might be able to make the connection between the dream and the event. On the other hand, it might call, if it's a warning, for immediate action. If you dream about something 3 months, 6 months, a year, many years before it develops in waking life, on the one hand, you might have many opportunities to change that evolving future because you've got a lot of time to work with, but on the other hand, it might be awfully difficult to relate the dream to the whole process in waking life that it describes, because the events are a long way off. You don't know quite how they're going to develop. I find in my life, the life of an active dreamer, of course, that I dream of big developments in my life that reflect a whole evolution of circumstances. 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, or longer, before the circumstances come to fruition in waking life to which the dreams relate. This gives me a lot of time to work with if I want to tinker with something in the possible future I perceive in dreams, but at the same time it challenges me to make the basic connection between the dream and the events to which it might relate, and often I miss that connection until later, when sometimes I am ticked off with myself for having missed an advisory, and sometimes I'm simply satisfied to feel that friendly pat on my shoulder, hear that friendly whisper in my ear of my dream friend reassuring me, this is okay, you're on the right path. A final thing to consider in figuring out how you can change the possible future you see in dreams is the whole weight of the life burdens you carry. Perhaps even the karmic indebtedness that you carry. All the luggage you've acquired in your life. Don't you dream about problems with luggage from time to time? Where do you put your luggage? How do you get rid of unnecessary luggage? Well, metaphorically, luggage is a pretty good symbol of the life burdens we acquire going through a typical life with all its spills and thrills. If your life habits have contributed to a problem with disease or misfortune or unemployment or something of that kind, it might not be straightforward to avert the future perceived in dreams. You might be swimming against the tide to some extent. But all the same, my basic feeling about all of this is that we too readily buy into the notion of the inevitability or predestination in an individual life. I'm of the opinion, as a West African divination priest once said to me, that very little in human affairs is actually set in stone. Very little is predestined. The futures you see in dreams or in divination are not absolutely established futures. They're constantly evolving. It's part of a dance. The probabilities are changing all the time, changing constantly. And your ability to change the outcome depends on your willingness to participate in the dance. Maybe the only things that are given in your life, the only things that truly belong to the realm of fate, are your basic character, the constellation of personality traits, the basic shape of energy, personal energy with which you were born, the natural path of energy that is defined for you by the character you were born with. Maybe the only things that are predetermined are character on the one hand, and the basic allotment of time and energy that you might enjoy in this life. In ancient Mesopotamia, this allotment, this life apportionment of time and energy was called shimtu. That is your lot, your appointed span of years and energy. You can shorten your life in all sorts of ways, by bad habits, addictions. You can also be interrupted in a violent or brutal fashion. It's awfully hard to expand your basic apportionment of time and energy, though I've seen even that happen in the life of an active dreamer. And I'll tell you that story briefly. A woman I know, whose dreams assisted her through a life-threatening encounter with breast cancer, a brave woman, gentle woman, active dreamer, member of my personal dream circles for many years, started dreaming when she was in her early 20s of moving through a dance hall, initially almost deserted, dressed for a wedding in a white dress, towards a pair of doors, of swing doors, beyond which she knew lay her death, and she knew in the dreams that she would die at the age of 43. This became a serial dream. She returned to that dream locale in night dreams year after year. Each time she returned to her dance hall of the dead, there were more people in it, all of them people she knew, people who had died physical deaths in the intervening time. When she entered her 43rd year, she was diagnosed with malignant breast cancer, metastasizing quite fast, and confronted with an encounter with death of the most literal nature. Her dreams helped her through this tremendously challenging and terrifying encounter. And the dream that marked a watershed in the history of her disease, she's now been in remission for many years. her situation turned around in a way which her oncologists found extraordinary. The turning point in the history of her illness, of her personal encounter with the death anticipated in dreams for more than 20 years before the life-threatening illness was upon her, was a big dream in which she found herself arguing, pleading with, quarreling with an entity as vast and as deep as a mountain, the messenger of her own death, which reminded her that her time was up, that before she'd come into this lifetime she had accepted a contract under which she was to die at age 43. She pleaded. She fought. She stood her ground. She talked about the reasons she had for living, about the people who'd come into her life who needed her, about her desire to learn from her experience to help and to heal others. And after a long, thunderous intermission, the messenger of her death returned to her and rewrote her contract, extending her span of years. It's a remarkable story, much deeper and more moving than my brief retelling. It is one of those rare moments that I have observed when I think that someone was able, through heart, through soul, to extend their basic allotment of years. She feels the same, but that's relatively unusual. One further commentary on this remarkable dream experience, this dream healing, culminating in the big dream of renegotiating your life contract. Amongst all the types of precognitive dreams, one of the easiest for us to understand, even with our Western paradigms, is the prodromic dream. That is to say, the dream in which we perceive future manifestations of physical symptoms in our bodies. Because, as we've heard and seen already, dreams are body talk as well as soul talk. Our body knows what is going on inside it, and it communicates with us in dreams long before physical symptoms manifest themselves or need to manifest themselves. This is the most natural thing in the world and not at all difficult to understand, but in dreams we might see the development of possible health problems long before the symptoms are manifest. Another good reason for tending to dreams that might involve our personal future. You know, dreams about the future can be immensely helpful in the most challenging and emotional circumstances in personal and family life. Many people, in addition to the dying, have dreamed of the passing of a close relative or friend or loved one before it has come about, and sometimes these dreams have been immensely supportive, reassuring, helpful in these passages. A young woman, an active dreamer, tells the story of a beautiful and moving dream in which 2 months prior to her mother's passing, she sees her mother as a radiant, luminous, shining being, a younger person. And she knows, or perhaps she doesn't express it to herself clearly at the time, that this dream is about her mother's passing. And after her mother's passing, she sees her mother again in this luminous, radiant, vital, vibrant, younger form. What a gift a dream of that kind is. What a reassurance of life after life. What a teaching. You might be saying at this point, what about my anxiety dreams? You know, I see myself driving off a cliff on a difficult mountain road in my car. Am I supposed to give up driving that road, going skiing, which involves going up that road, because I dream of driving off that road in my car? Of course not. But the dream is not to be shrugged off as just an anxiety dream all the same. A dreamer shared with me a story of this kind in which she sees herself driving off a difficult mountain road on her way to go skiing or something like that. And she goes through all the processes of saying, gee, I'd better cancel my trip, or then it's only an anxiety dream. At the end of the day, perhaps without telling herself exactly why, she finds herself driving with even more caution than she normally exercises on that road. That is an example, whether or not it was fully understood by the dreamer, of the dreamer working with a dream, bringing its insight into waking life. Whatever we are going to do with dreams, we need to find creative and sensible ways, smart ways, to manifest their energy and insight in our waking lives. It doesn't help us to shrug off dreams that might contain advisories about the future by saying, it's only a dream or it's only an anxiety dream. As a presenter and lecturer, a classic anxiety dream for me would be getting up on a platform and finding myself absolutely unprepared, not knowing what's going to happen next. You find that kind of dream often amongst professors, lecturers, teachers, ministers, rabbis, people who get up in public and have to talk. They find themselves without their script. Well, that might be hyping the situation for some of us, but it might also be an advisory to do more preparation, to get more carefully prepared for the occasion. We have to think about dreams in terms of rehearsing us for future situations. We are constantly going through this process of rehearsal. If we act on the energy and insight of the dream, once again, we don't have to live out adverse consequences. You see yourself going to a job interview, you do badly, you can't get your words out, you're sneezing. So you remember to take your cold medicine or get a good night's rest in bed, maybe a good day's rest before you go to the interview, and you remember to mind your P's and Q's and talk to the potential boss in a certain way. That's working with a dream, even if you're not going to stop and think very closely about the whole process. In shamanic cultures, quite complex rituals of dream enactment or dream avoidance are sometimes adopted. The Iroquois Indians of the Northeast were almost an extreme example of this. I remember a story I discovered in my research into the early history of the Northeast frontier, reading the Jesuit missionary writings about the early shamanic practices of the woodland tribes at the time of first contact, which brought this home to me. Let me share the story with you. I'm not recommending it as your own practice today, but it is an example of the lengths to which shamanic dreamers traditionally might go to construct rituals to bring about the enactment of a favorable dream or the avoidance of an evil dream, on the assumption that dreams are real. A Mohawk war chief, according to the Jesuit missionary account, dreamed that he and his warriors were defeated in battle with a hostile tribe, and that he was fire-tortured to death. He shared the dream with the whole community, with the elders and grandmothers, with the strong dreamers of the people. And they decided to help him out in the following fashion. They had a stake set up in the village clearing. They bound him to the stake. They fire-tortured him with red-hot knives and hatchets. They left him alive. They believed that by play-acting the dream to this extremity, they would avoid its final evil consequences of death of the chief and defeat and possible subjugation or annihilation of his village by the enemy tribe. Isn't that strange to our way of looking at things? The idea that a powerful dream of that kind could not only be accurate, but might need to be averted by such elaborate means. As I say, I'm not recommending that we go to the lengths of the early Iroquois shamanic dreamers in our efforts to avoid evil consequences foretold in dreams. But I do think we have to look very carefully at the ways in which we should take careful and sensible action in waking life to act on our dream warnings. The best, clearest, most authentic way for you to read your dream messages about the future is to learn to go back through the dream gate into your personal dreamscape, relive your experience, and check the meaning of your dreams on their own ground. This is the heart of the practice of conscious dreaming. And in the next session, you will learn four specific techniques by which you can travel through the dream gates.